It doesn't seem like this kind of China plus one narrative that's come out just kind of generally in the corporate world is doing the trick either.
Well, frankly speaking, your advanced substrates aren't made in China. Your advanced substrates, you typically find those in Japan, Taiwan, Korea. We've had some new facilities that are installed in Malaysia, but I mean the a lot of your advanced assembly operations are not in China either. So they, not for the very high end. Those are located in Taiwan, in Korea, not even in Japan because they got out of the business of manufacturing a while back and now they're trying to get back in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. I'm your host, Zach Peterson. Today, we're talking with Jan Vardaman, president and founder of TechSearch International. We'll be talking mostly about the National Advanced Packaging Manufacturing Program. Jan was involved in this as far back as 2021, and I'm very excited to speak with her about this today. Jan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, I'm sure some folks in our audience may not know who you are or what you do. So, if you could just briefly tell us a bit about what you do and your company, TechSearch International.
Well, I founded our company in 1987, so we've been following developments in packaging and specifically advanced packaging since before it became so popular. And so that's all we do is really focused on the technology trends, the markets, and any new developments. And then, of course, we understand the infrastructure. We've been all over the world in all kinds of manufacturing facilities. We have a number of analysts who travel and have a lot of technical background and a lot of experience in the industry. So we have, kind of our fingers on the pulse of what's going on.
So you originally came across my radar because you co-authored a 2021 report on packaging with one of our past podcast guests, Matt Kelly from IPC. So if you could tell us how you got involved in this report and then tell us what some of the main findings were.
Well, IPC asked us to help them with this, taking a look at, what's really needed in the infrastructure in the US more than in North America, more than just a semiconductor fab. Because frankly speaking, what people were missing is that if you just have a semiconductor fab and you still send everything back to Asia for packaging, you haven't solved your supply chain issues. And so the point of this was to look at what was here, what's needed, what the infrastructure looks like, where the players are today. And surprisingly, there's a couple of dozen small companies that do some assembly here, some a little bit advanced, but the bulk of the assembly takes place in Asia. And a lot of the work that's done here is for defense. And then there are really no substrate companies that are located in the US at the time we did the study. There's some people that are trying to get into this now, but it's a lot easier looking in PowerPoint than it is in real life. So it's the big suppliers are in Asia. And so we kind of documented the infrastructure that needs to go along with semiconductor fabrication. And specifically, if you want to change your position in the US. Except we looked at all of North America. And there's some things in Canada. IBM Bromont is a facility that's very well known for very advanced packaging. But, there's not large assembly operations here in the US.
So you highlighted two different areas, right? There's the assembly side, which is basically putting the semiconductor onto the substrate, and then there's the actual substrate fabrication itself. So
Correct.
the assembly side, I know there's some OSAT capacity, I think, in Silicon Valley and probably some other areas. But it sounds like up until this started to really become a major, conversation starter on the news, there really was no fabrication capacity at all, except maybe at the prototype stage. Is that correct?
No. I mean, there's some military and defense and some medical and things like that that are in the US and have been for quite a long time. But the scale that they do things on, defense doesn't need millions per week. And so the capability and the capacity that's here in North America is on a much smaller scale than what you see in a factory in Asia. So while some of these companies have been here a long time, a lot of them are focused on lead frames. A lot of them are focused on, you know, legacy kind of defense work. There's not much that's been focused on the high performance space. And so that's the space that that I think that, you know, needs to be funded if you plan on doing more semiconductor fabrication in the U.S.
So just in terms of the market share, you highlighted in the report that the market share is extremely lopsided. I mean, more so than PCBs. The Asian global market share is 97% of packaging.
Well, that we didn't come up with that figure.
Okay.
And we've actually tried to find out who came up with that figure. And it doesn't, you know, once these figures they get thrown out there, get a life of their own, what we documented is the is things like flip chip BGA assembly, which takes place, the majority, actually 40-something percent, takes place in Taiwan. And we looked at, you know, some very specific examples of where the capacity is located. And, you know, in substrates, it was very interesting. In the build-up substrates, what we found was that a large percentage of the capacity was located in Japan, yet almost none of the assembly was there. It's an export product that goes to other parts of Asia for assembly. So it was very interesting to kind of look at this whole infrastructure. And that's, I think, what people sometimes miss when they start talking about this space, because they miss that, you know, generally this has been a global industry and you've got equipment producers that are all over the world. And so you have to really take that into consideration when you start discussing how you're going to make changes to that, where you have a lot of things done here. And you have to have, you know, one of the reasons people keep talking about workforce development is you have to have a workforce that's skilled, that wants to work in this manufacturing sector. And quite frankly, all across the world, people are having trouble getting enough labor to do this.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring up the workforce end of it. And, you know, IPC just recently put out a post about celebrating the U.S. Department of Labor approval of some new apprenticeship programs in electronics manufacturing.
Yes.
Is that just a drop in the bucket compared to the overall demand for labor?
That's a start, but you have to have a lot of, I mean, any of these things that we do here require people to be, you know, as operators, as engineers, and by and large, you've had more young people interested in software and other things rather than manufacturing. And that has to change if you're going to do manufacturing here. I mean, you can automate to a certain degree, but you can't automate everything. And it's much more challenging to automate a high mix, low volume, which is typically what's been in North America. So there has to be a lot of things that change. And this is not going to take place overnight. And you've got to encourage all kinds of, you know, folks to join this area,
yeah,
of manufacturing.
I agree. And you brought up the point about a lot of young people focusing on software. That is certainly something I've noticed over the course of my career. They've sucked up a lot of talent in the software space, and you can argue whether that's a good or bad thing. I think on net, it's a good thing, but you know, what are we going to do about getting those kids to get interested in hardware again?
Well, and you know, that's I think why there's been a lot of emphasis on that, and the apprenticeship programs at IPC are certainly a very good start on that. But, you know, we have to do a lot more. I mean, the manufacturing has to become interesting to people more so than it is today.
So shifting gears for just a moment, on March 12th, the National Advanced Packaging Manufacturing Program announced its Notice of Funding Opportunity. So what does this mean for, let's say, PCB manufacturers who want to get into the ultra HDI space and the substrate fabrication space?
Well, for PCB manufacturers, they have to understand that this is a different segment of the industry, and it doesn't take place in a traditional printed circuit board fabrication operation. it's the advanced substrates that are needed for the future have to take place in a clean room with different types of equipment that are traditionally used for printed circuit boards, a different workforce, a different attitude, a different approach to manufacturing, and a whole lot more metrology in that back end if you're going to be doing these things. So it's a very different, it's not just take a big printed circuit board, chop it up into pieces and sell it for more money. That's not the way it works.
Well, I would agree 100%, but you know, I bring this up because there are manufacturers, there's some of the larger end manufacturers here in the US that are really trying to go that direction. They're more traditionally known as PCB manufacturers, but you know, you have Calumet, you have American Standard Circuits, they're adding these ultra HDI capabilities. And I think that puts them on the roadmap to then getting to a place where they can do substrate fabrication at scale. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
As long as the first thing they do is install the clean room, and then the clean room mentality that goes with that. Because if you can't yield this stuff, then don't do it. You have to have high yields. I mean, these are fine feature sizes. We're talking microns, not mils.
Right. Right.
So it's a very different type of operation, and it needs a different approach. So you really have to appreciate that. And you have to have the metrology systems that are going to bring you to the yields that make sense economically. Otherwise, you can't do it.
Well, another aspect of this, I think, is on the business side. Obviously, this requires a lot of investment. Some of it could be public.
Yes, it does.
Some of it could be private. You know, you've already brought up clean rooms. So that level of investment, I think, is going to drive some consolidation in the industry, and it's going to maybe restrict who is able to get into this area and do it at the level that's required to get those high yields and to make it economical.
Yes, and you have to have the customers buy into using a supplier that's here in the U.S. And that's been a challenge for a lot of people. So, you know, certainly defense would like it if you have a substrate here, but unfortunately, defense doesn't have a large enough volume to drive a manufacturing facility of the scale that you see in Asia. And you need that scale in order to, you know, really make it work economically and from a business standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just wondering now, you know, what's it going to take to start to get that demand to trickle back in? I mean, it doesn't seem like things like export controls and tariffs are really doing the job. It doesn't seem like this kind of China plus one narrative that's come out just kind of generally in the corporate world is doing the trick either.
Well, frankly speaking, your advanced substrates aren't made in China. Your advanced substrates, you typically find those in Japan, Taiwan, Korea. We've had some new facilities that are installed in Malaysia. But I mean, a lot of your advanced assembly operations are not in China either. So they, you know, not for the very high end. Those are located in Taiwan, in Korea, not even in Japan, because they got out of the business of manufacturing a while back, and now they're trying to get back in. So what your legacy lead frame production, a lot of that is in China, but that's not what we're talking about today.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a bit of a disconnect between the policy end of it that does focus a decent amount on China and then the industry needs from the economic standpoint.
Well, I think that, you know, policies toward China are a separate area and that they shouldn't be mixed up with what you're talking about here in manufacturing and supply chain issues. I mean, those are two completely separate discussions.
Well, I agree, but I bring it up because whenever someone brings up supply chain, they ultimately bring up China.
That's because they don't understand what's there. I have been all over the manufacturing facilities in China in many different locations. I was on the NSF sponsored study mission to look at manufacturing in China, to look at optoelectronics in China. So I actually am speaking from experience, and I can tell you that one of the things that we saw when we looked at some of the advanced substrate capabilities or some of the advanced manufacturing, it was very difficult to do that with any yield in China because they had too much labor turnover. And when you have a complicated process, you really can't have high labor turnover.
That's a good point. I think that's something that we don't really think about. And especially here, I think lately in the U.S., especially among the young people who we want to get involved in manufacturing, they tend to have higher labor turnover.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, if you go to a facility, a substrate facility in Japan, for example, there's a guy that's been there for the last 30 years, and he knows exactly where the knobs are set on all the equipment and how to have that process have a very, very high yield. And when what happens, you know, you have to have that consistency in order to maintain those high yields. So if you have high turnover, it's very difficult in a complex process to have very good yields. And you have to have good yields in order to make a business work. So that's from a financial standpoint. So those are some of the challenges that I don't think people really understand completely.
Yes, this is something I'm learning more about as we kind of dive into this area. Getting back to the notice of funding opportunity for a moment. So is this an explicit allocation of public dollars to investment in American substrate fabrication and assembly capacity?
Part of it does address substrates, but the idea of the NAPMP is to set up something that could go from research to production. So that, you know, and what you need, look, when you look at what's in Europe in terms of research facilities, their research facilities, like, for example, CEA Leti, where they have production type equipment, not, you know, hot plates and tweezers, like in a university. So I think that what this idea is to try to have things set up so that they're more of a commercial bent rather than just, you know, you hear people in universities talk about FedEx process flow. Well, FedEx process flow doesn't cut it here. And if you're going to bring up a complicated process, you really have to have dedicated lines. A dedicated pilot line that's going to, you know, allow you to develop that process and then at some point transfer to some actual manufacturing line. But you also have to have customer buy-in for all of this as well. So there's a lot that goes into this equation, and simply taking out your checkbook and writing a few checks isn't going to address that. So it's a lot of cooperation. I like the meeting that we had in DC the other day where we talked about people getting together to partner to make these things happen. Because I do think it, you know, there's a saying, it takes a village. Well, it does. And so I think that, you know, you really have to get creative if you're going to. I mean, they're great inventions that come out of the U.S. There's no question about it. But, you know, moving things to manufacturing just isn't exactly what we're known for. So to change that is going to take a lot of work and a lot of cooperation. And quite frankly, you are going to have a lot of work and cooperation between universities and manufacturing. And I certainly think that we've seen that, but we need more of it, not less.
Do you think there's willingness to do that given the vendor lock culture that happens in electronics?
Well, you know, one of the things that if you talk to some of these large companies, they have their supply chain set up and they don't want to change that because there's cost and there's time involved in changing your current supply structure, infrastructure. And so to get people to make changes there has to be a reason to do that. Now, maybe people will get nervous about things like earthquakes and, you know, other natural disasters. And they'll think about maybe it's good to have multiple locations but it really takes a different approach and a different commitment and strategy from the customer level to also make this happen.
So getting back to the the program for just a moment. How does the NAPMP announcement differ from the prior two Defense Production Act awards?
This is not focused just on defense, which is small volume. It's focused on larger commercial scale and transferring things from these basically pilot lines into, you know, potential production. I think that there's a lot of moving parts to this that still have to be addressed. And, you know, we're going to track all these things as they're funded. And basically, years from now, go back and look to see that what people have promised they're going to do that they actually do. But it's just more complicated than people give credit to. And I think that it's certainly certain things are called out for development, but we have to remember that it has to be driven by the market. Whatever we do has to make economic sense. Like if you're going to do some new substrate technology, it has to be competitive with what's already out there. You also have to make sure that whatever you're doing is going to pass reliability tests. So there's a lot of things that have to go into this this work. So I think that we're getting there, but this initial funding is really just the start.
Yeah, and then there's also the assembly end of it. For example, you know, 3D stacking of dies, some of the newer packaging methodologies like Info.
Well, 3D stacking of dies is you can do some micro bump configurations where you stack using bumps, but the pad to pad hybrid bonding that people are talking about is very complex and requires the design tools and design tools that specifically look at that are thermally aware, that address all the issues. And so there's a different set of applications that will use that versus other packaging options. And when you mentioned Info, you're speaking about an RDL structure where you use copper polymer layers to get to the fine features that you need to attach a chip to that can route a higher density. And in some cases, people, you know, the Info package has been used by Apple. It's done by TSMC on their production lines in Taiwan, but it's been there since at least 2014, if not longer. So it's really going way back. So that's more than 10 years. So, I mean, we don't have any of that kind of capability in the U.S. There are some licensees like SkyWater that's supposed to put some RDL in. There's a pilot line that's going in at Arizona State University. Both of those are going to put in the DECA M-series process. So there's a lot of things that are starting to go in place here, but you know, you're talking about comparing it to something that's 10 years in production someplace else. So
previously you brought up Europe just briefly, and we recently discussed with Stephen Ezel from ITIF about the difference between the policy approaches in the U.S. and Europe. So in Europe, has there been a similar focus on these initiatives, specifically around substrates, especially following the European Chips Act passage?
I haven't seen a lot of emphasis on substrate production in Europe, frankly. I've seen some, there's a lot of, again, small companies that do assembly in Europe, and they have capability for, there's a lot of like photonics work, but there's not in some cases their assembly is similar to what we have here. It's a lot of small operations, smaller than what you see in Asia. But The difference, they had, do have a big automotive industry there. And I think that they've already had, Amcor announce that they're going to add capability to the Porto facility to support assembly. Now, where the substrates, AT&S has announced they're going to put some substrate capacity in their facilities, a little bit larger than an R&D operation, and probably sufficient, but they're kind of just getting started there in supporting their industry. But again, same thing applies. If you just put in semiconductor fabs and you don't do anything else, you really haven't solved any problem.
Yeah, I read recently that the EU, or at least some member nations in the EU, want to become much more independent when it comes to their chip production capabilities. And it sounds like they're just focusing on fab and not any of the other stuff. And maybe they're...
Well, there's a group that's actually trying to focus more on the back end, but the majority of the announcements and the majority of the funding has been focused on fabs and to continue to emphasize their research facilities that are very well known, like CEA Leti, IMEC, and Fraunhofer. And there's some others, smaller ones as well. So, I mean, they do very good international research. And I mean, the other thing that I think people are sometimes forget is that in all of this funding, it's important to remember that small business is the small companies are the ones that come up with a lot of new ideas and have the creativity to then develop something that ends up being a large company later. And I think that Europe has, in some cases, they have a lot of smaller companies that sometimes have come up with some really good ideas. I don't know how much they're going to fund those. I hope there's more funding for that here, because after all, if you look at companies like Apple, they started out really small and then they became very big. So I think it's important to look at, you know, the small companies and support them to get that innovative creativity that's going to lead you to the next generation technologies.
Well, and then with part of the focus of the NAPMP being commercialization, it sounds like that's laying out a path to take some of these good ideas and really get them up
to
scale.
It's yes and no. I didn't see a lot of emphasis on small business. I think small business has been asked to partner with some of these companies, but I mean, I would like to see more emphasis on, you know, how to enable small business to participate in some of these things. So maybe there will be. I think that remains to be seen.
It sounds like for small businesses, really their only route is what, licensing or getting acquired or just pumped up with VC?
Well, I mean, there's been SBIR awards for a long time. That was a program set up originally through NSF. But I mean, there's, but in all of this, you know, thinking, I mean, it's the problem is it's not a simple solution. And I hope that there's some small businesses that'll be partnering with other companies to basically develop new technologies that will enable us to be more creative in the way we approach the infrastructure related to the semiconductor industry.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I have one last question, if you could briefly address this. In the IPC report, it's stated, and I quote, if the United States is spending $25 billion on semiconductors, then it should spend at least $1 billion on substrates to stand up world-class manufacturing facilities. Are we on that trajectory? And is that objectively the right number?
Exact numbers aren't probably what's important here. But what's important here is the emphasis that we need on creating the whole ecosystem. And if we don't create the whole ecosystem, we're basically wasting money on the front end fab.
I think that's a great point, and it's something that's been highlighted by many of our guests on the show. So I definitely want to thank you for underscoring that very important point that you just made.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for being with us. Everyone that's out there listening on audio, we've been talking with Jan Vardaman, president and founder of TechSearch International. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button and hit the like button. You'll be able to keep up with all of our podcast episodes and tutorials as they come out. And last but not least, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.